The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Fastamai, good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line today. Airport Director Gary Cobb is here. The political head of that department, the Minister for the DOI, Chris Thomas, MHK, Douglas Central, MHK, is with us. So we're talking about the airport today. And now, if you have any thoughts, if you are an airport user, if you collect somebody from the airport, if you just drive past the airport, I wonder what your thoughts are. Text, email, call and WhatsApp. 166177 on the text and on the WhatsApp. studio@manxradio.com is the email address, or you can call 66 1368. And Fastamai, good afternoon. Chris Thomas,
good afternoon.
And Gary Cobb. Hi Gary.
Good afternoon.
Good to see you. I think everybody on the Isle of Man always wants to know where people have been. So where were you before the Isle of Man?
So before the Isle of Man, I was the Chief Operating Officer for Highlands and Islands Airports Limited. So that is 11 airports, all Scottish government owned, ranging from Inverness, which is the closest to Ronald's Way, down to Barrow, which was one of the beaches on one of the little islands up north, but also including Sumburgh, Kirkwall, Tyree.
11 airports?
Yes.
How did you cope?
Very good team.
Yeah. Did any of those land on the beach?
So Barrow is the beach airport. So again, it's the one that most people look romantically. I think we had a couple of proposals on the beach where they'll go and write it as the Twin Otter comes down and lands on the beach.
Crikey. So what drew you to the Isle of Man?
So the Isle of Man, so approached with some of the issues that they were facing for some support and some advice. And then actually, as I saw, came, had a look, it was a good opportunity, so, and something that I thought I could contribute and help with.
Okay, so when you came, I mean, was it a road to Damascus? Did you say, I know what I can do, I know how I can improve the airport?
So I knew the issues that was facing the airport, and again, they're all pretty much the issues that I think everybody else is aware of. Unfortunately, with airports, things just take time. So air traffic control, which people probably have questions on, even with the recruiting that we've just done, so we've got 4 recruited just now, one with a final offer, we won't see them as fully valid ATCOs for at least 18 months to 3 years, depending on whether they're experienced or students. So again, unfortunately, no matter what we do, that is just a function of time.
Okay, well, you're in the news today because the mail's going to be arriving later after TT. What's this story? Why a later opening?
So with air traffic control, we have a retiree, we have the new students, as I was saying, and the experienced ATCOs coming in, but that's 2 to 3 years for them to finally be fully endorsed and to be able to operate. We're changing the roster to be able to facilitate more of the opening hours, moving it a little bit at the start of the day helps. So ATCOs that start in the morning have to take their mandated fatigue breaks every 90 minutes. If they start later on in the morning, then that can stretch to 2 hours for the fatigue breaks.
I think we should put this in stone. Air traffic controllers simply cannot faff around with lunch breaks or
if an air traffic controller goes over by a minute from their scheduled time, they'll get called into the CAA. Their license is potentially put into jeopardy, and then I'll probably get called into the CAA as well. There is a reason why air travel is the safest mode of travel, and that is all the rules and regulations that we follow, and the rules and regulations that you would expect around air traffic control.
Okay, so I just want to nail this, because we often get people thinking that it's frivolous that an EasyJet flight's been delayed because an air traffic controller has to go and have a cup of coffee.
These rules happen everywhere. I think one of the things that comes up with, I hear occasionally on social media, tea breaks. I think that's probably people mishearing fatigue breaks. And again, they're mandatory. The rules are regularly laid down. We have just moved to some European European Aviation Safety Agency rules. But again, in old CAP 670, for those that want to have a look at the rules, they're pretty well laid down, and we shall harmonise with those rules. So.
Okay, Chris Thomas, as a politician, I'm guessing you get the old delay thing in the neck as well.
We do, and So just go back to this again. When you go up the air traffic control tower, there are a couple of rooms up there. There's a radar room, and above that, there's a visual control room. And I think people might imagine that there's lots of people up in that space, and all of them suddenly go out of the room together. That's not the case. There are very few people, one or two with somebody else training. And these are mandatory fatigue breaks under regulation. And the whole of the schedule for the airport closures is designed to minimise disruption. There's a couple of other issues that we should talk about, which is that I've answered questions over the last few months about the cause of delays, and often the cause of the delay is nothing whatsoever to do with Ronald's Way. So I think we ought to come to this weekend's closures as an example a bit later in the interview. And the second point is that the public should hear that although the airport's operational hours are being delayed, which is what the post office announcement says, that doesn't mean that the terminal building is still not open. So the terminal building will be open than that. It's just planes can't land.
And that's probably worth jumping onto. So when we say that the opening tower time is 6:45, that's for the aerodrome. That won't have any impacts on any of the departures that typically happen after 7 anyway. So people just turn up as per usual. In terms of the Royal Mail flight, again, whilst the aerodrome was open at 6:15, there was times where that came in at 6:45, so we're hoping that the impact should be minimal, because again, that flight can be delayed for some of the reasons that the minister was talking about.
Okay, let's go to the lines now. And Terry, hi, you're live with Chris Thomas and Gary Cobb.
Hi, good afternoon. Yes, long time listener, first time caller, frequent flyer. I just have a couple of questions to ask. One of them being, and this is no disrespect meant to anybody involved, but what are the qualifications that are needed to be an airport director?
So no formal qualifications required to be an airport director, although one of my titles is an accountable manager. So for an accountable manager, which is pretty much the only mandated role that you would have in an airport, having been an accountable manager before is helpful. So in Heil, I was the accountable manager for those 11 airports. And then it's probably knowledge in one of the specialisms and a broader knowledge across several of the other specialisms. So my time in Gatwick was doing airfield ops. But in Heil, I looked after air traffic control, security, and pretty much everything apart from finance and HR.
Okay, Terry.
Right, that's fantastic. So could I ask the Minister, was there nobody on the Isle of Man that was possibly qualified to do the job of airport director?
Yeah, it was an open recruitment process. There were local candidates, and the local candidates were unsuccessful on this occasion, and Gary was successful. Perhaps you ought to clarify as well, when you're an accountable manager, to whom are you accountable?
Yeah, so accountable manager is one where I am accountable directly to the CAA as a named individual. So one of the reasons why aviation...
New readers, by the way, CAA, Civil Aviation Authority, basically...
The regulator.
Gods.
Yeah, so... They are the regulator for the Isle of Man. So going forward, any accountable manager or airport director would have to have an interview with them. That's now, I think, in the rule set. And as part of my accountable manager status, I have to make sure that we do not subsume safety for cost. So if I will make sure that the airport always fails safe for security and safety, rather than just trying to push things through and make an unsafe situation occur.
Okay, Terry.
Yeah, and it's right. That's great. Yes.
But it is really
so
good,
taking.
Really good point.
Oh, hello. Sorry. So taking that in mind, was there a repatriation sort of package made to Mr. Cobb to entice him to come to the island, as you know, as the taxpayer footing that bill?
Yeah, I'm not sure how much was claimed, but the role was advertised with a relocation grant attached to it, like these roles are. And all I was going to say before was that you make a really good point. The preference would be for a locally qualified candidate, and it was an open, transparent recruitment, and the panel chose to offer the role to Mr. Cobb. I mean, you could tell us about your relocation terms if you want, but remember it was advertised at a maximum.
Yeah, so again, relocated, currently renting up in Ramsey. The other one in terms of a accountable manager, as I said, a accountable manager is the one role that an airport needs. So if you have a look, so when the Isle of Man had a vacant airport director role, I think Swansea had a vacant airport director role, their accountable manager, they didn't fill it. And I think the CAA have closed that with an action plan needed in place. So again, it is the role that actually has to be in place for an airport to be able to function.
All right. Terry, thanks for that.
Thank you.
Right, thank you.
All right, good to hear from you. I want to go. David's with us now. Hi, David.
Hello. I was on the Bristol flight yesterday that got cancelled. And I think the thing that irks me is it's always the Isle of Man that gets bumped when there's operational issues with EasyJet. I was at the airport in plenty of time. I was in the departure lounge 3 hours. They said the gate would be announced at 4, so late. And then instead they went over the tannoy and said, use EasyJet app to rebook your flight. And when you talk to an EasyJet customer representative, they were absolutely zero help. In fact, they had an attitude problem. Not many people have access to apps and things like that when they're travelling. And then the other thing is I've made my own way home. So I'm lucky enough to do that. There's probably a lot of people that are unable to do that kind of thing. I jumped on a bus into Bristol. I got the train up to Liverpool, took 5 hours, and I'm lucky enough to get on to find a hotel in Liverpool last night and the boat back this evening. But EasyJet service is abysmal, and I just want to know what the Isle of Man government's going to do about it.
So again, we speak to EasyJet on a regular basis. EasyJet have to manage quite a complex network. It isn't just the Isle of Man that get cancelled. I think we feel the impact of closures much more because we're an island, so there are very little places to go. But even whilst I was at Gatwick, you could see upwards of 60 cancellations, not necessarily all EasyJet, in the height of summer. Predominantly delays and cancellations. A lot of people think it's Ronald's Way. More often than not, it's typically in Europe.
So, do you know what the problem was with the Bristol?
So I think the problem in Bristol was issues over Europe. So I think there was ATC issues over Europe, and I think there was weather issues over Europe. So that plane was probably in the sky from about 5:30 in the morning, flying multiple sectors, and then tags us on at some point into the sector. The Gatwick one is the last flight of that sector. But as you can imagine, if it's been up since 5:30, literally if it's picking up 30-minute delays, 1-hour delays, eventually those become too much for the opening hours that we've got. We've spoken to EasyJet about moving that. It's the best time for them in terms of their schedule. So rather than move it, they wouldn't be able to. So it'd probably just be cancel it, which I don't think would be good for the island. And then in terms of speaking to them, we do speak to EasyJet on a regular basis. In terms of what you are entitled to claim, as long as it wasn't for acts outside of their control, so weather or air traffic control issues, typically in Europe, then EU 261 compensation claims apply. And even if you are impacted, it is for EasyJet to put you up in a hotel and for them to get you back over here as well.
And so, what do you say to people who, some people who aren't tech savvy, people who don't use apps? Everybody seems to be direct. And if you use apps, it's perfectly fine. But lots of people don't, can't, short-sighted, disabled. What happens there?
So again, EasyJet is a very digital airline, yeah. So our ability to tell them to put people into airports, I think, would probably fall on deaf ears. So I think, unfortunately, this is one where if you are flying, having an app is probably the place where you're going to need to go.
The issue, I mean, I think last week, one of the Gatwicks came, didn't land, went back, and everybody was dumped off at Gatwick and left there to their own devices. Is that what people... I mean, I'm not saying that's the Isle of Man, the airport's fault, but is that what people can expect nowadays, is that you'll have to fend for yourself?
So normally they will try and find, so you'll see their ground handlers typically involved. So in terms of, I think there gets quite a lot of confusion over what an airport does and what an airline does. Yeah. So check-in is done by the airline, although contracted out through a third party. Bags, so how long you're waiting for your bags, again, is not an airport function. We supply the kit, but again, the airlines supply the people, normally through a third party. That third party ground handler, unfortunately, in aviation since the pandemic has been quite slow getting back to numbers. They normally in Gatwick you will see ground handlers waiting around, so they should be able to help, but I think a lot of it is to go onto the app or to get a hotel accommodation and then to claim it back afterwards.
Okay, sorry, David?
Yeah, I mean, that's the issue. There was absolutely zero help from EasyJet customer service staff there. I mean, you know, I'm street savvy, so I've got my way up here off my own steam by, you know, buying rail tickets on the way, but there was zero help. I'm tech savvy, but by the that time of day, even if I had the app, I wouldn't have been able to use it because I was running out of battery power and you know, and I don't know if I've got enough data to use it. And even people out there that had the app said when they went in the app, there was no help in the app either.
Okay, Chris Thomas?
No, well, sorry for what happened to you, David, and congratulations for sorting yourself out, and you make a really good point. Barry Murphy has got a petition that he's going to present to me, and Barry Murphy is a seasoned campaigner, a good campaigner, and I think what I hear from his campaign is that we've got to make sure everybody in the public understands, you know, when it's the airline's responsibility, how to manage the airline at that moment, and you know what the airport can do to assist, what the ground handler can do. So, for instance, when I talk about managing the airline, you know, you have choices. The airline will make choices, and you've got to understand the consequences of your choices. You know, if you start booking in accepting hotels and not accepting flights, there will be consequences in terms of your compensation. So, what I hear from, you know, when I receive this petition from Barry Murphy, I think what I'm going to hear most loudly as we've got to work with the public so that they understand better what to do in Gatwick and Liverpool and Manchester and all the other partner airports that we have and with the partner airlines, because this is a real problem and it's affecting life, quality of life on the Isle of Man.
Okay, all right. David, thanks for that call.
Thanks very much. Barry has signed the petition, by the way.
Thanks for that. I just want to run this through this again, Gary Cobb, because many people will have heard this for the first time, and apologise to those who know it all. The airport, the airline, the ground handlers, who has responsibility at which state of the journey?
So pretty much all the airport supplies is air traffic control. So that is getting that aircraft from a gate up into the air and typically handed over to Scottish. We supply the equipment that the airlines use through their ground handler. We provide security, although we subcontract that out, but again, security is our in our domain. Car parking, naturally, is ours. That's pretty much it. In terms of the airline, check-in is an airline function. They subcontract that out to their ground handler. Calling to gate and anyone dealing with issues like that, again, will be the ground handler acting on behalf of the airline. Baggage, we provide the equipment, but the people manning the equipment is the airline. So when arrivals bags are coming in, different airlines, although here we only have one ground handler, Menzies, who do a very good job, but in other airports you'll see bags coming at different times, and that's because airlines have different contracts with different ground handlers for different times. Some could be an hour wait, some could be 30 minutes wait. It depends on what that airline wants to do. Some of the premium flag carriers will aim for quicker, more of the low cost will be based later. So again, it's think of it as a system rather than the airport in terms of doing it. In terms of cancellations, we have no control over the cancellations. Very rarely that we're told. We're just aware from them cancelling flight plans. And so generally there's quite a lot that could be split out to airline, although subcontractors to a ground handler, okay, or the airport. And the only thing we subcontract out is our security provision.
Okay, Julian, you're live with Gary Cobb and Chris Thomas.
Hi, Andy, and hello to Chris and Gary.
Hello, Julian.
Good afternoon.
Hiya. My first question is for Chris. Last week in the House of Keys, Jason Morehouse asked you about the forthcoming aviation safety audit, and you subsequently said, and I'll quote you, "We have regulatory risk." Can you elaborate on what regulatory risks Ronald's Way currently has?
So we've already had one described to us, which is the issue that we don't roster properly in air traffic control, and we have regulatory fatigue issues because we don't handle that properly. Gary hinted at one just then, which is aviation security. You know, every customer wants to get through aviation security as quickly as possible, but the reason we're responsible for aviation security is we've got a duty to protect the travelling public. So there are a couple of issues. Jason asked about an audit of the Isle of Man Civil Aviation Authority, and that's something for the Department for Enterprise, and that's a general programme. The two are not connected. Perhaps you could add something, Gary.
Yeah, and I can jump onto that. So with an airport losing its accountable manager, that instantly puts an airport into regulatory stress. So thankfully joining and then a period of time, we've come out of regulatory stress for not having an accountable manager. In terms of other regulatory risks, again, usual typical ones for an airport, so functioning SMS, safety culture, making sure that you're not subsuming safety for cost, etc. In terms of the audits, we're audited very regularly by the Isle of Man CAA. The audit that Mr. Morehouse was talking about, though, was actually, I think, a DFT audit of the Isle of Man CAA on how they then audit us. So absolutely nothing to do with the airport, not really that close to it, other than I know that it's going on, and that's probably one for the Minister for Enterprise.
Okay, Julian?
So just to clarify, the DFT is the Department for Transport Across.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
SMS is the Safety Management System.
And again, if it's any acronyms, shout.
Okay, Julian?
Yeah, how many more air traffic controllers do you think you'll need to get to the point where you won't be having the brake issue?
So air traffic controls a complex subject. So where we currently stand at the moment is we have 13 named individuals that we have on our roster. However, not all of those are trained. So we have 3 that are currently in training, and then we have 2 that are either through sickness, competence, or other issues out of it. We've just recruited 3 new students. They start in September, I believe, and then we have an ATCO that we've made an offer to. So that would then take us up to the 17, 18 number. But as I said before, the training pipeline for air traffic controllers is long. So,
and what's the quota? What would Runnelsway need?
So the budget in the past has been 14. We're currently aiming for 17, 18. 17, right. 18 will give us resilience once they're all fully trained. Even if you think about it on a simple basis of, most of my air traffic controllers have a 3-month notice period, but it's 3 years to train them. So You can lose ATCOs far quicker than you can to train them. People sit there and say, well, can we not just go to NATS and parachute some ATCOs in? Unfortunately, that's not how it works. They have to be trained on the airport. So we could go and get the very best ATCOs from Heathrow. Unfortunately, with Heathrow, they only have one type of rating. We need 3 ratings. So they'd have to go to college for some training and
just
then get...
Explain the rating.
So ratings, we have 3 ratings here at Runnelsway. So we have APS, which is a radar rating, so that does the approach function, so typically like 40 odd miles out coming into just being pinged onto the ILS. We have ADI, which is a tower rating, that's controlling them down onto the runway and around on ground. And then we have a procedural approach rating, so should the radar be out or should that we have not sufficient ATCOs to operate the radar, we can use 1 ATCO to do the approach, but that's using a procedure of a series of waypoints that they've mentally connected in their head. A Heathrow ATCO or a Gatwick ATCO is only ADI, so they'd have to go to college for their APS, APP, and then a period of validating them from that. So every single ATCO, no matter how experienced they are, when they come to this airport, have to be validated on the locality of the airport. It's the same in any other airport, unfortunately, around the world. Brexit's made it harder because we can't even recruit from Europe now. Any European ATCO would have to go through a UK conversion course to then be able to practice. So.
Okay, Chris Thomas?
I'm not looking for sympathy, and they wouldn't be looking for sympathy, but what I am looking for is understanding of what's gone on in the tower and in various other parts around the airport. You know, being constantly the butt of hatred, sometimes it feels like, can't be very pleasant. And I just want to thank all of the staff working in the tower this very busy period over TT. Just wanted to describe a little bit about their jobs from a personal point of view. The first point is, if we have an emergency during the night, somebody goes in the night to help with the people go in during the night to help with the medical transfer, and that's going to affect rostering and shift working the following day. First point. Second point is that, you know, air traffic controllers are human like everybody else, and they have tragedies and they have misfortunes and so on, and that all affects these things. So what I'm trying to say is, we need to understand what's going on in the tower, and we need to trust that we're remediating the issues, and that's the major point that I'm trying to get across.
And then to add further onto that, so medical, most people sit there and think, oh, I'm medical, but even a cold could be problematic for an ATCO that's trying to communicate. If you have high blood pressure, they can lose the medical for months on end. Fainting can take quite a big period, 6 months to do it. There's a load of different medical requirements that can stop them from being able to operate. Okay. Very similar to pilots.
And then if the tower says over the intercom to the pilots, you know, a fatigue break, it would be very easy to pretend that was a tea break, and that's not helpful. We're all in this together in that sense, and we've got remediation to do, and that's what we're trying to do.
Okay, Julian?
Just one side question. This is to do with getting the passengers to and from the airport. I hear that an electric bus that's trialled on a return trip from Douglas to Ramsey, which is 34 miles, only retained half its battery capacity. Now, this suggests that on fairly hilly routes, an electric bus has a total range on the island of about 68 miles, which might be a problem in trying to get passengers to and from the airport. Can you confirm or deny that, Chris, that they only got 68 miles worth of mileage on the hilly routes over here on these new buses that are being trialled.
Yeah, I can't confirm or deny the actual operational aspects. It's an operational trial, but that's exactly why we're trialling it. I do know the first time the Mercedes bus was over, you know, the usage and what sorts of routes it might be usable on was the sort of thing that was trialled, and that's why we've now got them in service on a different basis. Passenger transport to the airport, though, is very much an important part of our planning for the airport. We need good taxi service there, we need good bus routes there, and we need good parking. And we have reviewed very carefully the responses we had to our first parking order, for instance, and by the end of this week we will be making an announcement about our second parking order. That's over TT race week and also over the week after TT's finished, because getting people to and from the airport by bus, by their own car or by taxis or by any other way that people can imagine is very important to the airport, and that's something that we, you know, we have to work with Gary and the other directors around the DOI on.
Okay, thanks Julian.
Thanks Andy, cheers.
All right, good to hear from you. Mark's with us now on Man in Line. Hi Mark, you're live with Chris Thomas and Gary Cobb.
Yeah, hi everyone. Hi Andy, hi Chris. I read in the Alman newspapers, I just wondered whether this figure was correct or not, whether it was a typo. I've got two questions actually, one about airport and one about infrastructure to Chris really. One was in the Alman newspapers, it stated that in Timworld you said that the new flight management system could cost up to £300 million. And I just wanted to ask you whether that was true or false. And if it's true, how is the Ironman taxpayer going to pay for it? And the non-related question was over the weekend, I found out that Kroger have raised the 50 million fund to drill Manx territorial waters. And they've also booked the rig, but the government doesn't have the rules and regulations in place to allow the rig to actually drill, and that also your department is refusing to meet Kroger to actually discuss a positive way forward on this. So they're my two questions, Andy. Thanks.
Chris Thomas?
So 300 million is 300,000. Hansard reports it as 300,000. I did say it in a way, so I'm not going to accuse the newspapers of getting it as a typo, but they corrected it quite soon, and it's 300,000, not 300 million. The second point in terms of Kroger, I have met both Kroger and the potential well operator for Kroger, and I can't comment any more than that, except to say they were just introductory meetings. They were with officers, and essentially the request to vary the licence is being handled properly according to the factors that need to be taken into account to vary a licence.
Okay, thanks Mark.
Thank you.
All right, good to hear from you. Talking of Kroger, I'll bring Kroger in because we've been offered, if the Kroger thing happens, if it happens, when it happens, the Isle of Man is being promised millions and millions and millions of pounds. And I just want to bring Gary Cobb in here. In that one of your old airports this year has had a railway station put in, hasn't it? Inverness Airport has had a railway station put in. Who paid for the railway station? Was it the Scottish Government?
I think it was a mixture of Scottish Government and Network Rail, so okay. Not the airport.
OK, I'm just going down this path. About a mile away from Ronald's Way is a railway. Now, it has been postulated in the future that if the Isle of Man gets these promised millions, billions from Kroger, that we could have light trams on the Isle of Man. Could you see a situation in the future? Would you like a situation in the future whereby a tram would loop around to Ronald's Way Airport?
So as the Minister said, surface access is a big part of an airport. So how you get passengers to an airport and how you get passengers from... resilience in a system is always quite good, so having an additional way of getting passengers there is better should something happen from the roads. In terms of climate change and green, electric is better than cars, so again from a carbon neutrality point, of which the airport will be measured in terms of its scope 3 emissions, anything that we can do to swing the dial in that direction would be a plus.
What was the thinking behind the new railway station at Inverness Airport?
So I think the thinking behind the railway station was to enable people that were travelling from Aberdeen to Inverness on the train to be able to stop at the airport rather than either going from Aberdeen straight into Inverness city centre and then travelling the, I think it's something like 15-20 miles outside of the city centre to get to the airport.
Okay, well, could you foresee that in the future, Chris Thomas?
Well, it's not currently part of our master plan and won't be for some time, but our focus would have to be that we have really good buses on the Isle of Man. So lots of the hotels along the promenade have a lot of their customers actually coming straight out, getting on a bus stop outside their house, and they're every 20 minutes they're down at the airport on a pretty reliable service that's working reliably this year, as the directors and the staff promised me it would. And we've also got Sistra looking at our heritage rail network, and one of their objectives is to give us a report back on potential commuting use, airport use, freight use, and I'm looking forward to Sistra. To me, it seems very, very unlikely, but my focus at the moment is making sure we've got the right passenger access on buses, we've got the right car parking arrangements, and we've got taxis that work for people, because we do get a lot of queries and complaints even about taxi availability, and that's something that I know Gary's been working on.
Okay, I just want to bring that in then. Regards taxis, what is the situation? Is it getting better or going backwards?
So I think the taxi one, airport taxis are always quite complicated because it's out of town. So, and you can be sat there waiting and then a flight gets delayed. As an airport, we make no revenue from taxis either. So I think there's a surcharge that they charge, but we don't actually get any of it passed back onto us as the airport, which again would be quite useful because, again, more income means that we can spend more money in terms of resilience of ATCOs, resilience of security. So having a look at what we do, we need to work with all of the third parties, taxis included, to make it so that the journey of the passenger doesn't just end when it comes to our doors, that they can get to wherever they need to go. And I think everybody has
If people come out of from a journey, go outside, and there are no taxis, they will blame the airport, come what may.
Unfortunately, and happens. So our information team, so the ladies on the front desk, do a fantastic job of diffusing the situation and helping, typically signposting them to the bus, and a lot of people then use the bus. In terms of taxis, we find that pre-booking them makes it much, much easier than actually going and waiting. Doesn't help the incoming traffic that don't necessarily understand the Isle of Man and are waiting for a taxi, but for the locals that are coming back, if you need a taxi,
but we're not being defensive, really, Andy. What we're trying to say is we want the public to understand the reality, and then we want to work with the taxi drivers and the bus companies.
So won't the taxi drivers come? What's the problem?
Well, it goes back a long way, but you have Maloo plates, and we've still got about 15 years behind in developing arrangements for taxis, which is another part of my brief, and I do have regular things. The other point I want to say is I get attacked quite frequently in Tynwald by one member in particular about catering facilities at the airport, and again, that's something that's exclusively provided by an outsourced person privately. You've heard Gary a little while back say Menzies do a good job. That's a different company from the one providing catering, but I like to think that the public can understand that we've got to work with our private partners to actually get their money to invest to improve their services, and it's proving tricky for us, just like it is for so many people around the island, because wage rates are out of kilter with the cost of living. So, for instance, they're having to pay their staff more to open cafes and to handle baggage and to check three people's security, and that's something that we have to deal with. And so, okay. I'd like to think that our airport plans include working with our private sectors to get investments and to get better terms and conditions for staff. And I really want to thank everybody involved in all of those services.
Okay, Mr. Collister, you're live with Chris Thomas and Gary Cobb.
Good morning, Minister and Gary.
Good morning.
Yes, there's a couple of things that worry me regarding EasyJet, as you well know. For instance, why on Thursday night the plane came in but then didn't go out? Now, I'm not sure whether EasyJet say it was air traffic control, but bear in mind, I'm not sure whether you know this, but it was 2 hours and 20 minutes turning round at Gatwick before coming to the Isle of Man. So in some ways, I have a really think it was technical. And then, of course, it landed and couldn't take off again. So EasyJet lost the aircraft for 24 hours till 12 o'clock the next day, and the crew had to be put up. They also find now that last night's Gatwick was cancelled again, coming in and going out. they put an extra plane on. Somehow or other, they've found a plane for people today, and they're coming in, which is, incidentally isn't also an hour late, which is a special Gatwick and in and out. This has not happened overnight. EasyJet have been giving us problems with this late Gatwick plane for the last 2 years, even before the pandemic. It's a plane that I wouldn't go on, and I wouldn't recommend anybody to go on if they were going long haul somewhere else. If you were going just to London to stay, you could take a gamble on it. It's been so late some nights leaving the Isle of Man. All the trains had finished at Gatwick, and people were stranded at Gatwick Railway Station. Are you aware of that? It's also unfortunate for the business people. I had another businessman who was coming over. He got delayed. His flight was cancelled coming over. And you wouldn't believe it, but his flight 4 days later was cancelled going out. Now, if he said to me, if he was a visitor, he would not come to the Isle of Man because the service is not reliable. And we have to do something about the service being reliable. Yeah. EasyJet really consider the Isle of Man, in my opinion, a bit of a nuisance. And that is my worry.
Okay, Gary Cobb.
So hi, Alwyn. So me and Alwyn have regular conversations to catch up on it. So for the rest of the listeners, So Gatwick's a big aerodrome. It flies to lots of European destinations. You typically have a lot of European air traffic control issues. I think sometimes in the past that's been conflated with Isle of Man whenever they say an ATC issue. Typically it's in Europe rather than Ronald's Way. If we are closing the radar, it's for 30 minutes. It's not going to cause a two-hour delay. In terms of those flights coming in, it can sit on the ground in Gatwick whilst it's awaiting a slot. So unfortunately, Gatwick is a slotted airport. So that will be a takeoff slot.
Yeah.
And if you have a lot of off-schedule activity, which unfortunately Gatwick does as planes all bunch together, that can add a delay because the air traffic control can only do 55 movements an hour off that runway. In terms of, for us, it's scheduled to arrive before the time, so I'm reluctant to cancel a flight that technically can land. You know it will pick up delays. Our opening hours are only 8:45. We offer extensions past that. So in summer, we'll offer an extension to 9:30. That's best endeavours. The Minister mentioned the air traffic control team and the fire teams and the security teams that stop on. These guys stop on pretty much daily overtime just to make sure that people can get on and off. They get quite a bit of a kicking in on social media again, which is unfair because they work hard to try and make it happen. Unfortunately, they can only go to 11 and then that's when they're out of their hours. That EasyJet coming in, we are in conversation with EasyJet. There is a potential for that late Gatwick to be stay overnight. So in essence, there's not the outward bound trip. So it will land, come in, and then there'll be a morning Gatwick. That's conversations that are occurring. It's not a quick fix. The airlines have pretty much already done their winter schedule. So this is, if we can get in soon, that would be something that would be seen in summer 24. It might be a little bit too late for that. It might be winter 24.
Okay.
So again, it's, we're aware.
Well, that could be an improvement, Gary. But I just think Luton, they don't look at their schedules close enough. You've got this Manchester coming in now, and it comes in from abroad, Faro, and it comes into Manchester. Then it does the Belfast trip, and it comes back before it comes to the Isle of Man. Now, Belfast is open all night. It could have been scheduled to do the Isle of Man first, and it would have alleviated the fact that one night it was going out here just about quarter of an hour before you closed, and it could have been kept here all night. And Luton are not playing the ball, in my opinion. People are frightened to go on the late plane. They're now going 2 days before, or they're going on the boat. Now, you don't want them to go on the boat. When they get a new boat, they might be more tempted to go on the boat. Also, Minister, I think infrastructure is far too big. I think we should go back to the airports board. No disrespect to you, but your portfolio is large. I'm still waiting for a road in Scarlet Road. 8 years I've waited for a trench to be filled, and I can't get anybody to answer or do it. And it's affecting everybody as we pass twice a day, or more than that.
All right, Alwyn, look, we've heard all those points, and I appreciate you making that. And thanks for calling today, Alwyn.
Cheers, thanks.
Okay, thanks for that. I think the point, Gary Cobb, is that, and the aviation world is alive with rumours that EasyJet's losing £500,000 a day and Ryanair is hovering. So it feels sometimes that EasyJet think of us as a kind of national league, League Two operation that they can kick around.
I don't think that's the case. So we have conversations. I was in Poland the other week talking to EasyJet. They think the Isle of Man is a very well-performing airport. So when people, you see on social media, it's like, oh, why would anyone fly to the Isle of Man? You speak to EasyJet, they're really happy with the performance of the Isle of Man.
Are they making money?
I think they make money from the Isle of Man, yeah. Again, it's not something that is typically shared, so they won't tell us how much profit they're making. But I think some of our routes are profitable. If you have a look at some of the proxies that are available to us, then I think we are somebody that will feature in their plans. However, our feature in their plans is that we are an incredibly short sector that can be tagged on. So typically, you have an EasyJet, it'll come from Norway to Liverpool. It's on the ground for 2 hours because its slot then into Faro is about 7 hours later or whenever it is. They can then, rather than it wait on the ground in Liverpool for 2 hours, they can slot in an Isle of Man. That's how it's our biggest strength, but it's also our weakness in that it's strong because they'll always fly to us. The weakness is we are a filler to the rest of the schedule. We can't compete with some of the bigger ones just in terms of yield.
Okay, right, we're live today. Chris Thomas, MHK, DOI Minister. Gary Cobb is the Airport Director. On Man in Line, with you through till one. It's 13 minutes before.
Hello, my name is Jan. I have three questions for today's Man in Line. First of all, I would like to know what Gary Cobb feels he has achieved since joining the airport. Secondly, the Isle of Man is an international business centre and government is trying to encourage people to relocate here. What assurances can you give regarding the reliability of the air links to and from the island? Finally, what improvements are being made to help mitigate the effects of fog?
Okay, let's take those. Chris Thomas, first of all, then Gary can have a think about those.
Okay. The first one is that, building on Mr. Collister's question, before we get to Jan's questions, he'll be pleased to know, Mr. Collister, that we have set up a shadow airport board. So in a way, we're following his suggestion that we need to have proper challenge, proper support for the airport management and the airport staff to improve their operations. The second point is that we do worry in council ministers and in Tim Ward and in the department about airline routes and the reliability, but you know, picking up again on Jan's question. So we have a strategic air group comprising DOI and Department for Enterprise principally, and Council Ministers is expecting a report next month. It gets regular updates about where we are in terms of working with the airlines. So Gary mentioned he meets them. The Chief Minister and myself met them politically when we were at the Labour Party conference, for instance, in October. And I've got a meeting this week with somebody from an airline, and I know the Department for Enterprise Minister met with them otherwise. And I just wanted to also jump straight in on the instrument landing system, the ILS, and the runway resilience and the airport resilience, and hand over to Gary, because I think Gary's got something to tell us about improving that sort of thing.
Yeah, so I'll probably take the questions in a different order and probably need reminding. So in terms of where we are in terms of the ILS, so part of what we'll be doing is a master plan. Some of the master plan will be linked around expectations versus reality. So if you have a look at the resilience, staying open till 11 o'clock is done on best endeavours. ATCO's doing overtime, you can't necessarily guarantee it. Also, we're only populated until 8:45, so our rosters have quite a lot of lack of resilience because we're working longer than we need to. So I think we, as part of the master plan, we need to have a sensible conversation about what the airport opening hours actually are, and then we'll staff to them accordingly. In terms of the ILS has been here, I think, for 15 years. There is the potential for us to go to a Cat 2 ILS on both ends. That's something that will be in the master plan. The one caveat to that, though, is it's not Cat 3. You will still have days where we have too much fog that an aircraft will not be able to land. In terms of Cat 1, Jersey are Cat 1. I think Bristol have a Cat 1 on one end of the runway. London City's Cat 1. Sumbra, Kirkwall are Cat 1. So again, going to Cat 2 will make quite a big difference. but it will still have an impact in terms of low visibility. Other airports have bigger issues as well. So even Gatwick and Heathrow, once they go down to low visibility, they will, Heathrow have had a cab, they'll cut about 15% of their schedule just to allow all the flights through. So there's always going to be an impact of low visibility, and unfortunately that's kind of comes with living on an island.
Okay, as she asked, what you feel you've done?
So in terms of the main parts of what I've tried to do since coming in, so one has been, as I said, the safety and the regulatory stuff. So it's how to have a plan in place to, so now that I'm an accountable manager, that removes the regulatory distress from not having an accountable manager. There is some work in terms of safety culture and resilience, which again we have the plans for, which hopefully should take us probably until about next year, and then that takes some of that distress away. The other big thing that we've been focusing on is the master plan. Again, that master plan will tackle customer experience, it'll tackle asset management, how we manage assets, it'll talk about operational resilience as well. We hear everybody when they say that they want a level of consistency. We do aim for a level of consistency and some of the stuff in there. However, the airports that we fly to have quite a lot of inconsistency in them, and again that will be factored in. A lot of the issues that happen are outside of our control. We do work with the airlines to try and control it, but again, French ATC strikes, weather will always pose a problem for us.
Okay, Christos?
So just 2 points. The first one is that Runnelsway Airport is safe. It's just we want to make it even safer. And the second point is that what we're currently doing in terms of the main runway, at both ends of the main runway, is we're assessing costs and benefits for the options that we have, and then we'll obviously have to persuade Treasury through the DOI and then Tim Wild eventually to allow us to spend the money given the benefits that will arise from going to Cat 2 status. So that's where we are. We know we're an international business centre. We know that the travelling public, not only business people but everybody on the island and visitors to us on the island are dissatisfied with the with the way that they get treated by the airlines and sometimes even by the airport, and we're doing our best to actually come up with a costed set of options so that we can make rational choices on what the benefits will be.
Okay, with Chris Thomas and Gary Cobb on Man in Line.
EVF, fueling the island and fueling you with a great range of fresh foods and everyday essentials at our filling stations, and always great offers too. Ellen Vannin Fuels.
The 3 for £12 barbecue range exclusively at ShopRite. Choose from Andreas Meat Company Manx pork sausages, premium Manx burgers, tasty minute steaks, juicy pork loin steaks, or delicious glazed chicken thighs and drumsticks. Mix and match any 3 for £12. We also stock charcoal and picnic ware, so you can create the perfect barbecue feast all in one place. Add that to a great selection of salads, sides and snacks. It has to be ShopRite, where the riders shop.
Construction waste today.
Tells recycle for another day.
A builder's skip or two.
Tells skips will bring to you.
At Tells Skip Hire and Waste Disposal in Snugborough, you only pay for the waste you bring. For waste disposal and skips, give us a call on 677 137. That's 677 137. Visit Tells today or find Tells Limited on Facebook.
Call Tells Skips today.
677 137.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
We're with Gary Cobb and Chris Thomas today on Man in Line on Mags Radio. And just talking about the airport, Chris Thomas, you mentioned Barry Murphy and his petition, and Barry's on the line. Hi, Barry.
Hi, Barry.
Hi, good afternoon, Chris, Andy and Gary. I'm going to skip through this because I'm aware that there's very little time, but Chris mentioned the petition. The petition is still up and running. I'm really following on the back of what David said. I spoke to David earlier on this afternoon. David is currently stuck in Liverpool. He rang earlier on, and I totally sympathise with David's situation right now. So what I've done with the petition, or what I tried to do with the petition, is to try to keep updating it as time goes along with the situation I'm in currently with EasyJet, because my case is actually still ongoing with EasyJet. The complaint is now at a very high level. I'm awaiting a final response within 7 days. I haven't had any refund yet, believe it or not, after nearly 20 days, but I am promised that I am going to get money back eventually. And what I really just wanted to say, my feelings on this really are, is that the actual airline customers themselves seem to be stuck in a real mess between the airport and the airlines. It's almost like that the only loser here is going to be the customer, and there seems to be sad to say, because I haven't come on here to be very critical, but it seems to be very clear that there's a distinctive lack of communication between both the airport and the airline, and the customer seems to be losing out. Just to say to Chris, I will be sending in the petition within the next week or so, but what I want to do is get the final response from EasyJet about what EasyJet actually say, because, as I say to you, because I have kept going and going and going with this, and they have now escalated it to the highest level at EasyJet.
Okay, so, all right. That's great. Barry, thanks for that. We appreciate that. And finally, Tony B. You've got about a minute, Tony.
Right. Three easy ones, these are. Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon. I don't really need a lot of comments other than I'd like to know when you're going to get rid of the advertising on the ground floor, which makes the airport look dark, dingy and horrible and is not welcoming. I don't see why you've put it there to start with. It's a disgrace. And if you're going to advertise something, it should be on the inside of the airport and it should be the Isle of Man with directions to the buses, the taxis, etc. Parking's a disgrace as well. The fact that you want to charge after 15 minutes. I live in Ramsey, so it takes me an hour, roughly, or 40 minutes to get to the airport. And if the flight's delayed, I'm going to be paying. I think that's a disgrace.
Okay, all right.
Taxes and rates.
All right, Tony. Yeah, very quickly.
The last thing is buy an airline.
Okay, all right. Thanks for that, Tony. We appreciate it. Well, one thing we can certainly say, we didn't get through to every question. So my open invitation before Christmas, Gary, Chris, will you come back and talk some more?
Thanks. Happy
for that.
To.
We can hear about the master plan, what's going to happen. And we'll see what happens to EasyJet. All I can say is watch the share price. Chris Thomas, thanks for being with us
Thank
today.
Thank you very much, Andy.
Good
thanks
to talk to you. And Gary Cobb, thanks for that.
Thank you very much.
Open line tomorrow on Manx Radio from 12 through to 1. If you want to say anything, the answer phone's always open on 682 631. Thanks to Ben Hartley on the phones today. Stick around for Christy Dee.